Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 259 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what is going on with you, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
Having a good week. We've got two very good episodes on tap. This one that we're getting ready to do on Unsolved. On TCAT, we're wrapping up with the second and final part on Belgian serial rapist and murderer Marc Dutroux.
Man, what a good episode that is.
Well, you know, this is a guy obviously very infamous in Belgium, probably less known in other parts of the world, but the guy was a monster.
He really was.
His wife was a monster.
Yeah.
And he had a bunch of accomplices. The way that he was able to talk people into doing things he wanted them to do.
And man, you didn't want to know anything about this case personally and bring it forward.
No, because as we talk about in this episode, the second episode, over 20 potential witnesses died before his trial even began. Pretty mysterious. Let's go ahead and give out our shout outs. For Patreon, we had Ray Sanders.
Hey, Ray.
Nikki Andry.
What's going on, Nikki?
Maggie Dietrich.
Hey, thanks, Maggie.
Emily Gobble.
Well, there's Emily.
Lisa Welsh.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
Matthew Arp.
What's up, Arp?
Brianne Castaldi.
Ooh, Castaldi.
Rudy Leva.
Hey, Rudy.
Peter Steers.
Hey, Peter.
Sandy Roberts.
Well, thank you, Sandy.
Stephen Baker.
What's up, Baker?
Adrian Lee.
Well, hi, Adrian.
Lee Prather.
What's up, Prather?
Brandy Stringham.
Hey, Stringham up.
Arilla's Miniatures.
Those are really tiny.
Yeah, they are tiny. And last but not least, Sophie Proctor.
Hey, Sophie.
And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs, this week we selected Libido Works.
Well, hey, thank you, Libido.
We also had some great PayPal donations from Laura Boven.
Hey, Laura.
Aubrey Eldridge.
Thank you, Aubrey.
And Judy Larson.
Hey, Judy.
So thanks to everyone who helps out the show. All right, buddy, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
I'm ready.
We are talking about the Route 29 stalker.
Or as I would say, route.
Well, yeah, you can say it either way.
Yeah.
Route. I assumed you would have said route, to be honest with you.
You know what? You just never know what I'm going to say.
As countrified as you are.
I'm very countrified. Just ask my cousins.
From 1996 to 2014. Nine young women in their late teens to mid-20s disappeared from or were murdered along the U.S. Federal Highway Route 29 corridor. They were Alicia Reynolds, Julianne Williams, Laura Winans, Ann McDaniel, Morgan Harrington, Samantha Clark, Sage Smith, Alexis Murphy, and Hannah Graham. So obviously, Gibbs, we have to talk about this Route 29. It stretches just over 1,000 miles from Pensacola, Florida to Silver Spring, Maryland. So it runs along the country's east coast and passes through Georgia, the Carolinas, and heads into Virginia. Despite the nine victims that are known, some fear that there could be many, many more. Two of the women, Samantha Clark and Sage Smith, still haven't been located. It's widely believed that they, too, fell victim to the stalker.
Well, you know, when you talk about a case like this, it's very easy to assume that there has to be or could be more victims.
And, you know, to piggyback off that, I also think it's sometimes easy to assume that a large number of victims are all attributable to the same serial killer. It's sometimes natural to group a large number of victims under one serial killer, but that may not always be true. And we'll examine that, you know, in this case as well, because eventually two separate suspects were identified and convicted in three of these murders: Morgan Harrington, Alexis Murphy, and Hannah Graham. So this raised the question of whether either of these men could be responsible for any of the other murders and disappearances, and gave law enforcement hope that the cases could be connected. Unfortunately for the remaining victims' families, investigators have been unable to link either man to any of the outstanding cases to date. But what police are calling the Route 29 stalker was never caught. and remains on the loose to this day. However, authorities are open to the possibility that another serial killer who was active along Route 29 during the same time could be responsible. So, Gibbs, I think we have to start out by, you know, examining the victims in this case. On May 7th, 1996, residents of Culpeper County in Virginia noticed vultures circling high above a remote field outside the town of Lignum.
Well, that's never good because, you know, there's got to be something dead there.
There's something. We don't know what it is yet. Maybe somebody should go check it out. But would you go check it out? Because I would not.
I would.
I would not. And, you know, where we live, I would assume that it's a dead animal or something like that. Right. My first thought would not be dead body, victim. I wouldn't go there naturally. When people went to see what had attracted the vultures to the area, though, they found human remains in a shallow grave. It was the body of 25-year-old married pharmacology grad student Alicia Faye Showalter Reynolds. Alicia had disappeared 2 months earlier on March 2nd, 1996, as she drove the 155 miles from her home in Baltimore to Charlottesville, Virginia, for a shopping date with her mother. The day that Alicia went missing, her white 1993 Mercury Tracer was found around 6 p.m., 50 miles from where she'd last been seen along Route 29. She'd left a note on the windshield saying that she'd had car trouble. Despite the vulture activity around Alicia's body, law enforcement concluded she'd most likely been murdered the day of her disappearance.
I'm sure it had to be a gruesome scene, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a gruesome scene. The one thing that, you know, I take away from this is the car trouble angle. It's something that I worry about a lot with my wife and my daughters. You know, they're out driving. My daughter drives back and forth from college. It's something I always worry about. Now, today, in 2022, we've got apps, we've got cell phones. I can get to them pretty quickly. They're never really all that far away from home. We're talking about early 1996 here. There were cell phones, but I don't think they were that prolific at that point in time.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think every, you know, average citizen had one like they do today. Very few people without a cell phone today.
Yeah, it's more of the opposite, right? Most people have them back, but back then,
most did not. I would say that's true. My 87-year-old grandmother has a cell phone, so
yeah, she texts us a lot.
Yeah, texts you a lot for some reason, which I find very strange.
Well, you know,
she likes you better than me, just as most people do.
She's got some funny jokes she sends me.
She does.
Yeah.
The same month Alicia's remains were found, the bodies of 24-year-old Julianne Marie Williams and 26-year-old Laura Salisbury Winans were found at a campsite off the Appalachian Trail in Virginia's Shenandoah National Park. Known to their loved ones as Julie and Lolly, they were passionate about traveling and the outdoors. According to the Bangor Daily News, in mid-May 1996, the women took their golden retriever on a five-day hiking and camping trip.
Sounds like a fun event.
Yeah. I love to camp. I would rather go camping in the woods than go to the beach. My wife's the exact opposite. I do like the outdoors. I like nature.
Yeah.
I like kind of being off the beaten path.
Well, because you are off the beaten path.
I am. And I don't like the beach for reasons that I've already talked about. Jellyfish, sharks, stingrays. I've been either bitten, blown up, or stung by a bunch of different things over my lifetime. And I'm done with it.
That movie Jaws really got to you.
No, I've actually had real encounters and I'm done with it.
Okay.
But, you know, back to your point, that sounds like an awesome time. Here's the problem, Gibbs, with being out off the beaten path on, you know, let's say this type of camping trip, if there is somebody else out there with you who is looking to do something bad, it provides them with the perfect environment, the perfect opportunity to commit an evil act. There's very few people around. They're much less likely to be noticed. Julie's father reported the women missing when they failed to return home. Park rangers made a grisly discovery after locating the couple's car and dog, which was unharmed. But Julie and Lolly had been stripped naked and bound and gagged before their throats were slashed. So here we have another extremely gruesome scene.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that they thought would happen, obviously, when you go on vacation like that. And you have to wonder, with two women that enjoy hiking, being outdoors, was this one individual that was able to subdue them?
Well, I think it could be. I think it easily could be. If you have somebody with a gun, they could easily subdue, I think, two people at the same time. But we don't know, right? It could have been somebody working with a partner. On September 22nd, 1996, a couple exercising their dogs off State Route 723 near Lignum discovered the bound and badly burned body of 20-year-old Ann Carolyn McDaniel. According to the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, Ann, who had cerebral palsy, was last seen 4 days earlier, leaving the group home where she lived in Orange, Virginia. Ann's autopsy determined she'd been asphyxiated around 3 days after she disappeared. Her remains were discovered only about 10 miles from the location where Alicia Reynolds' body had been found 4 months earlier.
Okay, so we're in the same general area, which could lead to the thought of
it being the same person.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. Now, I will say the one thing that jumps out at me about, you know, these first four murders, we don't know how Alicia was killed because her body was pretty badly decomposed. But in the second, third, and then the fourth murder, the murders were committed very differently, right? Julianne and Laura were found naked, bound, and gagged with their throats slit. Ann McDaniel was asphyxiated and burned. Those are very different methods of murder. So if you're looking at the serial killer angle, not to say that serial killers can't switch up their MO, they can, we know they can, but I think a lot of times they stick with a fairly similar MO, and these are pretty far apart. So I just kind of want to throw that out there. On January 26, 2010, the body of 20-year-old Virginia Tech junior Morgan Dana Harrington was found by a farm owner in Albemarle County, Virginia. Morgan loved music, and she was studying to be a teacher. She disappeared 3 months earlier while attending a Metallica concert at John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville on October 17, 2009. When Morgan failed to return home, her parents reported her missing. CNN reported that a $150,000 reward was offered for information leading to Morgan's whereabouts, including $50,000 donated by Metallica itself.
Impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. And we've done a number of cases lately where musical artists have stepped up in cases, offering rewards, you know, getting the word out at their concerts, just trying to help solve cases. I think it's a really good deal, really good thing. According to ABC News, Morgan's body was found only 10 miles from where she'd last been seen. The Guardian reported that Morgan's t-shirt was found in a nearby apartment building, but her camera and the crystal necklace she'd been wearing were never found. The autopsy found that Morgan had sustained skull, rib, and arm fractures, and that she died of homicidal violence of an unknown origin. Almost 9 months later, around midnight on September 13th, 2010, 19-year-old Samantha Ann Clark, who was known as Sam, was last seen in Orange, Virginia, the same town where Ann McDaniel lived. According to CBS 19 News, the Orange County High School graduate said goodbye to her younger brother before leaving home with only her house key. Sam didn't tell her brother where she was going, but according to the Charlie Project, she said she'd be home in the morning. Sam's mother attempted to report her missing when she didn't come home, but was told by one police department that she had to wait 48 hours before making a report.
I'm not surprised someone would tell her that.
No, I mean, she is an adult. She's 19 years old. We would still love for it not to happen that way. I am somewhat surprised to see it that way in 2010, but I do think it's different when somebody is 18 years or older. Sometimes. I think it varies by jurisdiction. But thankfully, her mom contacted another police department, which advised that she'd been given incorrect information. So then Sam's mother was able to file a missing persons report. So I wonder, Gibbs, you know, the first law enforcement agency, did they give her bad information or was that their policy? I don't know. On November 20th, 2012, 19-year-old transgender woman Sage Smith was last seen around 6:30 p.m. near the Charlottesville Amtrak station on West Main Street. According to the Charlie Project, she was also known by the name Unique, and the Charlottesville High School graduate was taking cosmetology classes and living in an apartment with roommates. Sage moved from home to home as a child, was raised alternately by her grandmother, her mother. She spent time in foster care. On that evening that she disappeared, according to the Huffington Post, Sage spoke to her father at around 5 or 5:30 p.m. Her roommate later told Sage's dad she was going to meet a date. Sage had been looking forward to spending Thanksgiving with her family, but didn't come home. In the early hours of September 13th, 2014, 18-year-old University of Virginia sophomore Hannah Elizabeth Graham was last seen at the downtown mall in Charlottesville. That night, the British-American student had been at a house party before heading into town. According to NBC News, around 1 a.m., Hannah texted a friend saying that she was lost. USA Today reported the announcement of a $50,000 reward. And according to 6 News Richmond, more than 3,000 tips came in from the public as around 1,200 volunteers searched in the vicinity of Charlottesville and Route 29. Okay, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of tips.
It really is.
You think there's a correlation there? Maybe.
I would say yes.
I would say yes as well. You and I often discuss the amount of rewards. Does it correlate directly, indirectly, in some way to the number of tips received? I would have to say it does. You know, 5,000, 2,000, 1,000, 5,000 versus 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. I hate to say it, Gibbs, but, you know, people are much more likely to get off their duff and make a call for $100,000 than they are $1,000. You would like to think that people would do it just out of the sense of justice, right and wrong, wanting this person to be found. But I'm not quite that naive to think that. Some people are motivated by money. A lot of people are.
I'll say a lot of people, yeah.
Now, a lot of people want to do the right thing. I get that. I think where it really comes into play is when you need somebody to essentially tell on somebody they're close to. That's where the reward really provides, you know, even more of an incentive, because without it, people are not going to turn on their friends, their family, even their acquaintances. In many cases. Tragically, Hannah's remains were found almost a month later in Albemarle County on an abandoned property. According to CBS News, her gold crop top was unzipped and her black jeans were inside out. Her watch lay nearby, but her shoes, bra, underwear, and cell phone were never found. According to the UK Daily Mirror, the autopsy found Hannah, who had to be identified from dental records, had died from homicidal violence and was likely suffocated or strangled. Her body had been found only 4 miles away from where Morgan Harrington's remains were discovered almost 5 years earlier.
So we're seeing some similarities.
Yeah, we're seeing some similarities. I think the other thing we haven't talked about yet is we're also seeing quite a bit of span of time.
We really are.
On these deaths. Now, we know some of these are going to be connected to specific people. We said that right up front. According to Boston 25 News, on December 3rd, 2020, the remains of 17-year-old Alexis Tiara Murphy were found on private property along Route 29. The Nelson County High School student and volleyball captain was last seen just over 7 years earlier, on August 3rd, 2013. Alexis had left her home in Shipman to drive to Lynchburg to buy hair extensions. Along the way, she stopped at a gas station in Lovingston, Virginia, where she was last seen on CCTV around 7:15 p.m. Then 3 days after she disappeared, her 2003 Nissan Maxima was found in Charlottesville in a movie theater parking lot just off Route 29. This wasn't very far at all from where Sage Smith was last seen just a little over 8 months before Alexis went missing. So to your point, we are seeing similarities in location.
Yes.
And the proximity of where, you know, victims' bodies are being found. Dogs trace a scent from Alexis's vehicle to the Arden Place Apartments in Charlottesville, but then the case went cold. Her identity wasn't confirmed by authorities until February 2021, 2 months after her remains were found. In 2014, someone was convicted for Alexis's abduction and murder, but we'll talk about that a little more in detail later on in the episode. So, you know, if we talk about this in terms of the investigation, let's go back to the first known victim. In March 1996, police set up a roadblock to talk to potential witnesses the day after Alicia Reynolds disappeared.
That's good, right? To collect any information that might help them understand who was in the area, what did people see. It makes good sense.
Yeah, I think it's good police work. According to the Northern Virginia Daily, some drivers told police they saw a woman and a man on the side of the road near a car with its hood up, with a dark-colored Nissan pickup truck parked behind it. They said the man appeared to be white, around 5'10 to 6 feet tall, in his 30s or 40s, with medium-length brown hair. Witnesses said they saw the man pull the hood down before the couple got into the pickup and drove away. One woman even reported that a week before Alicia disappeared, a man named Larry Breeden flagged her down while she was driving home. Larry told the woman it looked like she had car trouble, and he offered her a ride. But once this woman got into Larry's truck, he attacked her. Thankfully, the woman escaped. Police believed it was the same man who could have taken Alicia. And Gibbs, that reminds me of, you know, one of the stories about the Zodiac killer. You know, in at least one instance, he was known to have flagged down a woman driving, saying that, you know, she had car trouble, her tire was going flat, and he kind of used that to his advantage.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when I was researching this. That's exactly what I was recalling.
That from the Zodiac killer?
But I'm thinking of in the movie, you know, I know you read a lot, and I do a lot of watching movies.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was fairly accurate.
Yeah.
From the movie. But I think the thing that jumped out at me about this one was I didn't find anything where this woman thought she was having car trouble. It was the fact that he told her he thought she was having some type of car trouble. That's a scary situation.
It is.
You know, to get out of your car and get into a stranger's vehicle. Now, maybe she was experiencing something that we didn't see reported. I don't know. True Crime All the Time Unsolved is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, TCAT fans, whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, then they'll show you a variety of of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. You know, folks, I spend a lot of time researching and writing, getting ready for the podcast. My family knows that I'm in the basement a lot. What they don't know is sometimes I'm taking a break from all that work, scoring some quality time with my favorite game, Best Fiends. I love Best Fiends. I've been playing it for quite a long time now. I love the graphics. I love the characters. I love that sense of accomplishment when you get to the next level. And it's a game that you can pick up and play whenever you want. You can play for a long time. You can play just a few levels at a time. All of that is what has led me to get my level over the 300 mark. Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting levels for new adventures and challenges every time you play. I mentioned the fiends. There are dozens of unique fiends to collect. You can power them up and watch them transform as they get stronger. You can play this game offline, so you'll never be stranded without fun, even if you lose your internet connection. And they have new events and challenges that pop up year-round. So download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play. You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's Friends Without the R, Best Fiends. Something interesting about where Alicia's body was found around 2 months later was that it was a wooded area, only about 15 miles from where she had been last seen. But the area wasn't really somewhere most people would stumble across during their travels. And police quickly determined that the killer would need to have some type of local knowledge, right? This comes up in a lot of cases that we do. You know, some of these places are so far off the beaten path that they're not likely places that you're just going to, you know, run into. You're going to need to know where you're going to get to some of these places.
Right.
And so it does make sense when police make that determination. You know, could you make the argument that someone from out of town could just happen upon this place by chance? Yeah, you could make that argument.
You could. You could say they researched it for a little while.
Sure. You could make that argument as well. But I think this is a good theory that either it's someone local who has the knowledge or it's someone who went to great lengths to do the research to find out, you know, where this place was. Forensic technicians recovered fingerprints and hair that they thought belonged to Alicia's killer, but they couldn't identify anyone. Authorities chose not to release information about Alicia's cause of death. According to NBC 12 News, Virginia State Police released a sketch circulated throughout Virginia, Maryland, and Washington, D.C., and they received more than 10,000 tips. I imagine, Gibbs, some of those tips came in just from people thinking that they knew someone who looked like the sketch. I think that's the problem with sketches. You look at a sketch and you think, oh, that kind of looks like so-and-so.
Exactly. I know that guy.
Yeah. Or it somewhat resembles this person that I know. It's much different than a photograph, right? You look at a photograph, you know that's not one of your friends.
Yeah.
But a sketch is a little different.
It's kind of like, you know, in Seinfeld, they had the sketch of Kramer. And then in your office, they had the sketch of Dwight.
Oh, you mean the one where they drew the mustache on Dwight?
Yeah.
And he couldn't tell it was him, even though it looked just like him.
Exactly.
Except that he had a mustache. So they got all these tips. Several women called in explaining that they, too, had been flagged down while driving alone on Route 29 in Virginia by a man who told them they had car trouble after they pulled over. Apparently, the man got these women to pull over by flashing his lights behind them, honking his horn, and yelling at them out the window as he drove alongside. Now, not all of these callers were attacked. Some reported that this guy got angry and he drove off after the women ignored his advances after pulling over.
Well, good thing they did that.
Well, it is a good thing. I'm still kind of shocked about how many of these women actually pulled over. I would understand it if these were police lights. Somebody somehow obtained, you know, some fake police lights and they thought this was law enforcement undercover, something like that. I mean, I would tell my wife and daughters, certainly don't pull over. If anything, smash your foot on the gas and get the heck out of Dodge. But
yeah,
I'm not blaming these women at all.
No, maybe this guy was very convincing.
I'm sure he was.
You know, maybe he looked the part and had a very convincing way of showing concern. That
right.
They believe that, boy, they better pull over.
They thought he was trying to help them. I get all that. Because my assumption, Gibbs, is that he had probably been using this ruse for some time. He had worked on it, tried to perfect it,
sure.
Probably knew what worked and what didn't just by trial and error. 6 years after Julie Williams and Lolly Winans were slain, in 2001, there was a breakthrough in their double murder. 34-year-old Maryland man Daryl David Rice was indicted and charged with capital murder, among allegations that he'd also committed a hate crime, given that the victims were gay. But according to the Banger Daily News, a lack of forensic evidence saw the charges dropped in 2004. And when we hear about this, I always think about the victims' families. You know, the elation of thinking that finally they have caught your loved one's murderer.
Yeah.
To kind of the, what would you call it, Gibbs, the valley of maybe depression when the charges are dropped because they don't have the evidence.
Yeah, that letdown has got to be huge.
Yeah, the highs and lows that the victim's family experiences in these situations has to be unbelievably tough. When investigators looked into Ann McDaniel's disappearance, they found that she was known to hitchhike. According to the Staunton Daily News leader, on the night Ann disappeared, she told her roommate she was going to meet a date. She was seen around 9 p.m. at the 7-Eleven on Main Street in Orange. Like Hannah Graham, Ann's body had to be identified by dental records. DNA was found at the crime scene, but the news reports don't mention exactly what it was. As with Alicia Reynolds, Ann's killer was thought to have known their way around the remote area where she was found. According to the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, detectives were suspicious of a male volunteer at Ann's group home, whom she told people was her boyfriend. But despite seizing evidence from the man's home, he wasn't charged.
So another letdown.
Yeah, I think it has to be, you know, we were just talking about the families of the victims. I think these have to be huge letdowns for police as well. They think they have somebody. In one case, they charged that guy.
Right.
But eventually the charges get dropped because they just don't have the evidence. According to ABC News, Morgan Harrington was captured on CCTV footage at the Metallica concert. She'd gone out to the bathroom, but was turned away by security staff at several entrances when she tried to re-enter the arena. The day after the concert, Morgan's purse and cell phone were found in an overflow parking lot near the arena, where witnesses said they'd seen her waiting later that night. According to ABC 8 News, male DNA was found on Morgan's t-shirt, and a dog's hair was found as well. The national database indicated that the person who matched this DNA had previously committed rape in 2005 in Fairfax County in Northern Virginia. The man was 32-year-old nursing assistant Jesse Leroy Matthew, and he owned a dog. According to 6 News Richmond, on the night Morgan disappeared, she was seen near a cab Jesse was driving in the arena's vicinity. This was a guy who had a history of attacking women as well as reckless driving offenses. We'll come back around on Jesse in a little bit. According to NBC News, as investigators looked into Sam Clark's last known movements, it was totally out of character for her to leave the house in the middle of the night, and she didn't live close to public transportation. As police conducted their inquiries, they discovered that she'd been hanging out with a new group of friends the week before she disappeared, including 45-year-old Randy Allen Taylor. Randy had been in phone contact with Sam right up until she went missing, and he told investigators that he believed he was the last person to see her that night.
I don't know if that's the thing I would ever would want to say.
Well, I think if you're guilty, if you've harmed her, you wouldn't want to say that. Now, if you were a completely innocent person who cared about her or, you know, was friends with her or something like that, would you say it because you didn't have anything to hide? Or would you say it because you were trying to throw the police off to make them think that you didn't have anything to hide? So you can look at it, you know, a bunch of different ways.
That's a really good point.
That's why I made it. According to WTOP News, Randy stated he was trying to warn Sam that another woman was planning to assault her. When it came to Sage Smith's disappearance, police interviewed those who knew the young woman, but this is an open case. So the research doesn't mention who these people were. Her family knows that it was extremely out of character for Sage not to be in contact with them. So we talked about the fact that the body of Hannah Graham was found in October 2014, a month after she went missing. Her case proved to be one of the few in the story where there was a breakthrough. Almost 2 weeks after Hannah disappeared, Jesse Matthew, who was also a person of interest in Morgan's murder, was arrested in Galveston County, Texas, following a tip-off to police. According to ABC News, Hannah was seen on CCTV cameras in town with Jesse in the early morning hours. NBC News reported that witnesses saw a man matching Jesse's description, talking to Hannah, buying her a drink, and later putting his arm around her as he led her to his vehicle. Earlier that evening, Jesse was said to have been bar hopping in the downtown area, behaving in a sexually aggressive way towards women, and making them feel uncomfortable.
One of those type of guys.
You don't want to be that guy.
Don't ever be that guy.
Now, ultimately, he's going to be a much, much worse guy. According to CBS News, one witness stated that when Jesse opened the passenger door to his car, Hannah said, "I'm not getting in that car with you. What is it, stolen?" And there was some stuff in the research Gibbs that said, you know, Hannah's friends told police that she had been drinking at the party. CCTV footage from the mall shows her a little bit unsteady on her feet. So it's pretty consistent with some of the evidence or some of the statements from witnesses who saw her downtown that night. Hannah's DNA was found on evidence seized from Jesse's home, including his shorts and from inside his car. Other witnesses came forward reporting a vehicle matching Jesse's, which was seen around 7 a.m. the next morning near the abandoned property in Albemarle County, where Hannah's remains would later be found, around 12 miles southwest of where she was last seen.
So none of this is looking good for Jesse.
No, I mean, you know, if people and CCTV footage and different things are putting you with her, witnesses are saying that, you know, they saw the two of them together. Couple that with DNA evidence. No, it's not looking good. In October 2014, Jesse was arrested for Hannah's abduction and murder. Just over 3 weeks later, her body was found. Almost a year later, on September 15, 2015, 33-year-old Jesse was charged with the first-degree murder and abduction of Morgan Harrington, which occurred 5 years before he abducted and murdered Hannah Graham. In March 2016, Jesse pleaded guilty to murdering both young women. He was sentenced to three life terms, including the 2005 attempted capital murder, abduction, and sexual assault in Fairfax, Virginia. Jesse was not eligible for parole. Now, we've talked about Randy Taylor in relation to the disappearance of Sam Clark. Randy had been in phone contact with Sam the night she went missing, but Randy Taylor also came up in the disappearance of Alexis Murphy, who went missing 3 years after Sam. According to Boston 25 News, when investigators looked at gas station CCTV footage in Alexis's case, they saw Randy holding the door open for her as she entered the store on the last day that she was seen. The footage also showed Alexis's car pulling out behind Randy's SUV as they left the gas station. The attendant later testified that the pair spoke, and when police released the video images, a local pawn shop owner recognized Randy.
You know, what I am seeing a lot is the use of the CCTV.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, now, obviously, we're talking about, you know, a time where CCTV footage was available, right? We don't see this when we go back into the older 50s and 40s and 30s. Obviously, police didn't have any of that at their disposal.
So you can see how helpful it is.
Sure. Because it's not someone's recollection.
Right.
Which we know is imperfect. What did the person look like? Okay, I'm horrible at that. How tall was the person? I can take a guess. But unless there's one of those strips by the door, I can't tell you for sure.
Yeah, same here.
But the TV doesn't really lie, right? The video doesn't really lie. Not that witnesses lie all the time. They just don't always remember everything correctly. That's just human nature.
Sure.
It's been proven.
Yeah, just watch My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
And you'll know everything you need to know.
Exactly.
The other thing that I thought, Gibbs, was that you're going to be recognized by the local pawn shop owner? I mean, we already know you're a scumbag.
Yeah.
But to be recognized by that guy? Okay.
Might be in there too frequently.
We know what you're up to. Hey, folks, CBD is great. You've heard me talking about it for probably years now. My wife and I have used it for quite a long time. But did you know that there are other beneficial cannabinoids out there like CBN? CBN can give you an amazing night of sleep. And whether it's CBD or CBN, my wife and I are buying all of our products at jacbd.com. JACBD.com has all the things that you want and more. Delicious CBD gummies, which are great for calming the mind and reducing anxiety. They have the nighttime gummies that utilize CBN and melatonin to knock you out even better than NyQuil or Benadryl ever could. They have some great tinctures, some that you can put in your morning coffee to reduce the jitters. Basically, what I'm saying is they have everything, and you can save 20% off with the code CRIME at JACBD.com. Go to JACBD.com. JACBD.com. It's just five letters, JACBD. Use promo code CRIME to save 20% off store-wide. Support Johnny Apple CBD and support the show. Hey folks, can we talk about health for a minute? Because there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself. Because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Sambucol helps you feel your best by supporting your immune system with premium black elderberry. Sambucol is the original black elderberry brand, so I know I'm getting immune support I can trust. I use Sambucol because I don't have time to miss work when I'm not feeling my best. These podcasts have to go out, so I take one or two Sambucol gummies every morning to help make sure I can keep doing what I need to do. And I love these gummies because they taste so good. They're like a little morning treat. I take them with my coffee to get my day started off right. They also have a ton of other formats to choose from, including syrups, drink powders, tablets, capsules, and more. They also have products for kids and babies as well. You can help support your entire family's immune systems with Sambucol. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com. Use code TCAT. That's 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more with the code TCAT. According to WDBJ 7 News, when the FBI searched Randy's trailer 4 days after Alexis disappeared, they found a torn fingernail, a diamond stud earring, and false eyelashes with Alexis's DNA. They also found the t-shirt Randy was wearing in the gas station footage, and it was stained with Alexis's blood. Randy told detectives that her DNA was in his trailer because she'd accompanied another man who had gone to sell Randy marijuana. Randy claimed Alexis and the man left together, but police didn't believe his account. When Alexis's smashed cell phone was later found about 70 feet from his trailer. So it's a good story. You got to come up with something, Gibbs. You know, I always say that. Once you're caught, what else can you do?
Right.
You have to try to come up with something, throw police off your trail, lead them in another direction. The problem is it doesn't work when the evidence continues to pile up.
Yeah, it's mounting up against you.
Yes.
And it's not aligning with your story.
At a certain point, it gets to where there's no way you can talk your way out of it. In August 2013, Randy was charged with the abduction and murder of Alexis Murphy. He was convicted in May 2014, despite the fact that authorities hadn't found her body. Randy tried to pin Alexis's murder on Jesse Matthew, claiming that the two had contact via social media. But according to the Collegiate Times, DNA testing ruled out Jesse as being Alexis's killer. Randy was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences, and his subsequent appeals have been dismissed.
Well, why wouldn't he try to put this on Jesse?
You have to think he would have been familiar with Jesse, at least known about him, have read up on him. Okay, again, if you're throwing stuff against the wall, as we always talk about, why not add him into the mix? He's already a bad guy. He's known to have killed women in that area.
Yeah.
Try to throw the police onto him. But again, that's the great thing about, you know, the forensics, the DNA, all of that. So obviously it would have been rewarding for detectives, prosecutors to secure convictions against Jesse and Randy in some of the Route 29 cases. But there were four other victims who had been found dead. In addition, Sam Clark and Sage Smith were still missing. In November 2016, Charlottesville PD reclassified Sage's case as a homicide. They identified 29-year-old retail worker Eric Tyquan McFadden as a person of interest and possibly the man Sage was going to meet the night she disappeared. According to the Charlie Project, the pair met online. Before Sage went missing, she and Eric met up on one occasion for a sexual encounter. Eric gave Sage money in return for not telling his girlfriend. A $20,000 reward was announced for information leading to an arrest in Sage's case. But then in June 2019, there was yet another twist. Eric McFadden was declared missing. He kind of fell off the radar, Gibbs, after failing to meet with Charlottesville detectives in the days following Sage's disappearance. According to the Charlie Project, Eric emailed his girlfriend saying Sage had been blackmailing him, threatening to tell the girlfriend they'd had a brief sexual relationship. Eric did tell his girlfriend that he met Sage the day she disappeared, but didn't know what happened to her and that she had a lot of enemies. Law enforcement believes Eric could be in Maryland, South Carolina, Georgia, New York City, or somewhere along the country's West Coast.
So about anywhere.
Well, that's a lot. Basically, all you're cutting out is the Midwest. Anyone with information about Eric is asked to contact Crime Stoppers at 434-977-4000. 2.5 years later, in January 2021, the Orange Police Department reclassified Sam Clark's disappearance as a murder, citing new information and advances in investigative and forensic technology. According to CBS 19 News, we don't know what the technology is exactly or whether there's a suspect, but police are confident that they can make some headway. Three of the families we've talked about have seen some sort of resolution in the Route 29 cases. But I think, Gibbs, we need to look at who else detectives may have focused on during their investigation. We mentioned Daryl Rice from Maryland, who, according to the Northern Virginia Daily, is the main suspect in the murders of Alicia Reynolds, Julie Williams, and Lolly Winans. Medium.com reported that Daryl previously served time over an attempted kidnapping in 1997 and also drove a truck, similar to the one described by witnesses seen along Route 29. We don't really know where he is today, though. But according to Blue Ridge Outdoors magazine, Daryl was released from prison in 2011 and was last said to have been living in Colorado. Then we've got Eric McFadden, who's linked to the disappearance of Sage Smith. Eric initially stated he never met up with Sage on the night in question, but later emailed his girlfriend saying the pair did meet up. You know, we talked about it. This guy went missing in 2013. All right, did somebody get to him because they thought he had something to do with Sage's murder? Or did he voluntarily fall off the radar because he knew police were looking at him?
Strong possibility of going off the radar.
Well, and I also think strong possibility that maybe someone in Sage's family decided to take the law into their own hands. I mean, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but that possibility exists.
It sure does.
You and I have talked about it countless times. If we thought someone had killed one of our family members, would we be able to restrain ourselves? We like to think we would. I think everybody likes to believe that they would be able to hold back and let law enforcement do their thing. But would they? It's a question that can only be answered once you're in that exact position.
I think we both know what we would do.
And I'll leave it up to the audience to decide what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But I think when it comes to Eric McFadden, you can make the case of both of those scenarios. You can also make the case that he might have just met with a stranger who was out to do him harm. But there is one person that we haven't mentioned yet who some believe could be responsible for the remaining unsolved disappearances and murders: serial sex offender and killer Richard Mark Avanitz is the prime suspect in a 1995 rape in Spotsylvania County, Virginia. In September 1996, he abducted and murdered a 16-year-old girl from the same county. 8 months later, he abducted two teen sisters, who he has sexually assaulted and strangled before dumping their bodies in a Virginia river. In June 2002, Richard abducted another teen girl in Columbia, South Carolina, but she managed to escape from his home after being held captive and raped. When Richard realized that this girl had escaped, he went on the run, but the police caught up with him in Sarasota, Florida. But Richard shot himself rather than surrender to authorities.
So he was in the area. He had the MO.
He had the propensity to, you know, abduct, rape, murder. So I can see why some people would throw his name out there as a viable suspect. It's thought, Gibbs, that detectives in the Route 29 cases believe Richard killed Alicia Reynolds, but according to Medium.com, he hasn't been linked to any of the other murders or disappearances. Alicia's family told WUSA 9 News that they believe Richard is their daughter's killer. So that leaves us with convicted killers Jesse Matthew and Randy Taylor. You know, you have to ask the question, could either of these men be responsible for all or at least some of the unsolved murders in this case?
I think you can make a case for it.
Well, you can definitely make the case for Randy. We know he was, at the very least, an acquaintance of Sam Clark. He called her several times on the night she disappeared. I couldn't really find much on it, but you know police have probably looked at him very hard, right, for the murder of Sam Clark. He was in prison when Alicia Reynolds was murdered, so that rules him out there. And despite some saying he could be the Route 29 stalker, there's really nothing compelling linking him to the unsolved murders or disappearances. And the same really goes for Jesse Matthew, who's only been linked to two of the murders to date for which he's been convicted. There really are no further answers, Gibbs, for six of the families at the time of this recording, until sufficient evidence emerges in any of the individual cases or someone comes forward who has information. The identity of the Route 29 stalker for now remains a mystery. And again, that's assuming that all of the other unsolved murders that we talked about were committed by one person. We can't say that for sure. I can't even say that it's more likely than not, right? When it comes out that Randy Taylor killed someone, Jesse Matthew killed someone, and most likely Randy killed maybe another person.
Exactly.
You know, for me, it's hard to say, okay, yes, you have a definite serial killer in the other six without some kind of definitive MO or some, you know, link between all of the murders. But we talk about it because that's kind of the way that the case is referred to, or cases, if you want to put it that way. At the time of Sam Clark's disappearance, she was 5'4". She weighed around 145 pounds. She's white, has long brown hair and brown eyes, and wears glasses. She has several tattoos. She has a Playboy bunny on her right arm, two dolphins on her lower back, a Tigger tattoo on her right ankle, and the word lucky on her left ankle. Sam also has piercings in her right eyebrow, right nostril, ears, and tongue. If she were alive, she would be 30 years old today. At the time of Sage Smith's disappearance, she was 5'8". She weighed around 130 pounds. Sage is African American, has black hair, usually worn in braids, brown eyes, and a piercing in her left eyebrow. Sage was last seen wearing a black jacket, dark gray sweatpants, a black scarf, gray boots with pink and purple lining, and possibly a bleached hooded sweatshirt. If she were alive today, she would be 29 years old. If you have information on the murder of Alicia Reynolds, you can call the Virginia State Police at 1-800-572-2260. For the murders of Julianne Williams and Laura Winans, call the FBI Richmond Division at 804-261-1044. For the murder of Ann McDaniel, call Culpeper County Sheriff's Office at 540-727-7520. For the disappearance of Samantha Clark, contact the Orange County PD at 540-672-1491. And for the disappearance of Sage Smith, call Charlottesville PD at 434-977-9041. So Gibbs, as we wrap up this episode, a lot of information. We have a lot of victims.
A lot of victims.
In this case that, you know, many people believed are linked, at least now with the six. I think at one point believed all of the murders were linked. It was later proven that, you know, some of them were not. A couple of guys have been convicted. I think one of those individuals looks pretty good for at least one other murder.
I think so too.
Most likely the murder of Sam Clark. You've got Eric McFadden, who's kind of a mysterious guy, who's been, you know, closely linked with the murder of Sage Smith. You know, when you're the last person to have seen someone and then all of a sudden you kind of up and disappear, you don't look real good.
Yeah, typically not a good thing to do.
Now, in the case of Randy Taylor, when you're the last person known to have seen someone and then it later is proven that you killed another individual.
Right.
You don't look too good.
No.
So, I mean, I think a lot of people will put those together. Obviously, they don't have the evidence or they would have moved forward on those cases. But, and then I think you really kind of have to ask yourself, what's the likelihood that, you know, the rest of the unsolved murder cases were committed by one individual, or like we sometimes find out where there are just a lot of murderous, really bad, nasty people kind of weaving in and out of this area over this time period.
I mean, it is an expansive area, right?
Sure.
So you never know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Maybe one day they will start to solve some of the other ones, or maybe they'll find out that it was one person. And solve and put all six of the unsolved onto that one person.
I do think we're going to hear something with at least one or two of these over the next few years. That's my personal feeling on this.
Yeah, I like to think that way too. I mean, these are, in the grand scheme of things, you know, fairly recent
yeah
murders, right? We have DNA, I think, in some of these, or we're not talking about 1940 here. So I am pretty confident that some of these are going to be solved. Will they all be solved? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But that's it for our episode on the Route 29 Stalker. We got some voicemails, Gibbs. You want to check those out?
Let's hear them.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. My name is Don Lincoln. I love the show. My brother actually turned me on to it. Never really listened to podcasts before, but you guys rock. I got a suggestion for you. Actually, this Easter will be the anniversary of a murder that happened in a small town that I live in Coldwater, Michigan. The lady's name was Depew. She was a counselor at the Coldwater High School. They believe her husband murdered her, and it was actually an inspiration for the movie Jeepers Creepers. It's something that I think you guys should really look into, and actually, it's a little close to the family, my family, because my uncle was actually in the sheriff posse and was on Unsolved Mysteries looking for her, the body of the woman. Maybe that's something you should check out, and like again, you guys rock, love the show, and keep your own time ticking.
All right, appreciate the voicemail, really appreciate the kudos. And that's not a case I'm familiar with, so it piques my interest, and we'll definitely look into it.
Have to check it out.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. My name is Madison. I'm from North Texas. I've actually been listening to your podcast since 2018. It would get me through my job when I worked at Walmart and was up at 5 a.m. doing all these different grocery deliveries. And I just want to call in for the first time because I was actually listening to one of your newer episodes with La Quinta and wanted to bring up that here in Denton, it's actually a really big deal with sex, like human trafficking. And the human traffickers will actually put like red ribbon on your car if they think you would be a good person to take, and then once you get to your car, you're basically kidnapped. So it's been kind of a big deal here and gotten a little bit more dangerous, but I really enjoy your podcast and keep up the good work. Have a great day and keep your head on the swivel.
So Gibbs, you and I have been talking about human trafficking a lot more lately.
Yeah.
It seems like I wanted to play her voicemail because, frankly, it scared the you-know-what out of me.
Sure. It's like if you see a red ribbon on your car, cut it off right away.
That is not something that I had heard before, not something I was aware of. And it really, that's a really scary thing.
Extremely scary.
Good afternoon, Mike and Gibby. This is Scott K. Just like the jeweler, but less rich, period. I wanted to thank both of you for all the opportunity that you guys have to make such a wonderful podcast. I spend a great deal of time listening to it all the way from Florida, Maine, Louisiana, and every state in between as I drive a truck. I just wanted to let you know, Mike, I deliver Harleys all across the U.S. So if you ever need any Harley merchandise, just reach out. Again, it was a pleasure listening to you guys, and have a great day. Keep your own time ticking.
Well, Gibbs, Scott gets around, man.
Sounds like he gets around a lot.
In a good way. Yeah. Now, not only is he a truck driver, we love truck drivers.
Yeah.
He delivers Harleys.
We'll deliver two right here.
That is badass.
We have just two fall off the truck.
Follow, can they roll off? Because if they fall off, you're really lowering the value
Can we just have two roll off the back?
Just roll off the back and we'll just take them off your hands. But no, that's awesome. We appreciate the voicemail very much. All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Stream the biggest movies and TV shows for free on Pluto TV. Watch movies like Titanic and G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra, plus TV shows like CSI and Star Trek The Next Generation. Starting this month, check out the 24/7 Stargate channel exclusively on Pluto TV, plus hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows absolutely free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today.